Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, it's time for our John Hughes Movie Battle Royale. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
What's happening?
Amanda Sink.
Hello. Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Goodbye. I can't remember what it used to be.
What's going on? You still work here?
Yeah, I do. I'm moving in a couple months. Finally.
Closer?
Supposedly. That's the goal.
Does that mean you're going to be working here more often?
That's also the goal.
Fascinating.
Also, if you're moving in a couple months, does that mean you aren't moving now, which means you should have been working? No, I'm
just kidding. Nope, because I'm still driving 3+ hours a day.
I mean, people made choices.
Yep. Let me ask you, are you going to ever make that mistake again?
I plan on having kids eventually, so probably not.
Okay, nobody asked you to bring children into this.
what does your uterus have to do with your drive time?
Well, when you have kids, you can't really lose that much of your free time.
That sounds an awful lot like, well, I am a woman and I am never going to make that mistake again because I'm a woman.
It's kind of more just that reason. Like, I already know that that's going to happen at some point in my life, so I guess I'm probably not. You don't get to make stuff like that.
I think you're over-answering the question.
Like, really over-answering? Like, we're years down the line.
I thought it was pretty simple, and then there was, like, a question, and you don't know. 2 months ago, I was like, what if I just became a single mom and, like, went to a sperm donor?
Oh, don't do that.
I know. Wouldn't that be wild, though? Because, like, I'd get all of that, like, time off to bond with my child, and then, you know, you just get, like, a babysitter, and then they become your roommate, because you have to have a roommate now.
Oh, that's not how that works.
Speaking of, I just watched a TikTok where a bunch of guys like planned a heist and then they broke in and it was a sperm bank. And I thought that was really funny.
That was pretty funny. Were you in the bathroom when you did that?
What?
I just wanted to know, like, where are you watching your TikToks? Like, I watch a lot of my TikToks on the toilet.
Okay.
That's a very intrusive question.
Yeah, it's a really weird question too. So No, I do not. No. Why do you have to make it? Why do you and Troy consistently have to fucking make it weird? Just be normal. Just say normal shit on a relatively reasonably often basis. Just say reasonable shit.
Troy was on my side on this, so it's okay.
On this one? No, this one was weird.
Troy literally didn't even say anything. He was quiet the whole time. He was like, I don't know what the is going on, but
I don't
out.
Own the tick. I don't own the talk. I don't own a toilet. Okay, I pee outside.
Okay.
Oh my god!
What? I pee outside.
John Hughes, kids. Let's move on. You know what? He would never have had that conversation in his movie. So let's move on and talk about.
Yes, he would have.
I don't.
Judd Nelson totally would have.
He totally would have.
I don't think so. That wasn't romantic enough.
So we've got some, you know, reviews and some upcoming tracks, the usual smorgasbord of things. But before we get to the movie Battle Royale, John Hughes, Troy, your topic, you wanted to do this movie Battle Royale. That was big. And people love the idea. So you got to win there. Why? Why is John Hughes so special?
I think John Hughes, for a majority of us that grew up in the 80s, in the 90s, it's a coming of age story. It's a family story. It's a heartfelt story. The movies always seem to connect in a way that you didn't expect until like the movie ends. And then you're like, damn, I got some feels about this. And I think for a lot of people, especially us here at the Hollywood Outsider, for the majority of us between Amanda, who used to live here, and then Aaron and I, who still live here in the Chicago area, you know, John Hughes is a Chicago filmer, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the places that we see in these movies are places that I go drive by occasionally, you know? So it's like you can see the Home Alone house and you can see Shermer High School and all this other fun stuff. You can see the house where the red car goes outside the glass window in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like, all those places are iconic sites here in the hood. And it's fun to know, like, you have this like piece of history as we travel around the Chicago area to be like, oh, John Hughes was here. That's cool.
What I find fascinating is, I mean, you take our generations, right? We're Amanda and I and Troy and John are a generation apart. Fair to say? Yes?
Yeah.
But
No, I think you worded that wrong.
Yeah.
You, me, and Troy are in one generation, and yeah. Amanda is in a separate generation.
I literally said a generation apart.
No,
well, it almost sounded like you guys were all like staggered. The point is, they're old sons of bitches. I'm young.
Yes, that's what I literally said. But so
I've got the Paul Rudd youth.
The difference. I don't think that means
Paul Rudd. Dare you? No, you don't.
Charm and looks.
Sure. Why is it that like a film such as The Breakfast Club, which I know Molly Ringwald recently said she doesn't think some of those things hold up as well as they could have. And I'm like, you can't look back at history that way because things change, right? We evolve. That's how evolution works. But that movie seemed to resonate with your generation and the generation after you. I still know people whose kids love that movie. Why? I want to ask Amanda that, just because you are a generation removed. We saw that movie when it came out. It was very relevant when it came out. Why was it also relevant when you watched it, or to your generation, I guess?
I mean, that's the great thing about John Hughes, in my opinion, is that that's what makes him so long lasting, is that he does make stuff that's relevant generation to generation to generation, whether he realizes it or not. It's just simple human experiences, and the societal and like just different levels, like even your place financially in the system, right? Like where you rank in that, if you will, that is still relevant today as it was then. I mean, we're going on a slope where it probably won't be in a couple generations because we're running out of the middle class. But
it's true.
I think it's about experiences that everyone goes through. Everyone goes through being bullied. Everyone goes through, you know, being in high school and there being cliques and not feeling like you belong with these people, but feeling like you belong with those people, and trying to understand yourself and fresh new love and, you know, what's the right thing for me? Like, all of these youthful but maturing and adulting decisions that they have to come to with this like fun speck of romance and comedy that's splashed into his movies.
Good example. A good explanation. I remember just the first time I really got enamored with John Hughes, it wasn't Breakfast Club, it was Ferris Bueller. And I think a lot of that was because I was a goddamn truant. And I thought I was a mastermind. I once skipped an entire month of school because I rigged the notification system at the school. That's a true story. That's my mother. And I looked up to Ferris Bueller. I thought Ferris Bueller was an idol of mine because, yeah, this guy gets it. He knows how to do it. And when I would skip, I would try to be, I wouldn't go, oh, I wouldn't lead a parade or anything, but I was definitely trying to get the most out of my day. And I just idolized and I loved the humor of it. And then you look into his catalog, both as a writer and as a writer-director, and so many great films. He's got Vacation. He's got The Breakfast Club. He's got Pretty in Pink. He's got 16 Candles. He's got Weird Science. He's got blah, 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 blah. Like, it's just nonstop history of cinema. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's fascinating to me that anyone I talk to will like at least one of his movies. So he's not like a Quentin Tarantino where you like him or you don't like him. He's one of those where everybody likes a little something about him. You might not like all of it, but he does enough broad comedy that you're going to be attracted to at least one aspect of it.
I think it's a lot of times the characters too. Like, the characters are so normal, but also like they show the weird and quirky side of being a person that a lot of movies aren't going to show you. They're going to romanticize everything. They're not going to talk about the weird stuff. Like, he's willing to talk about weird stuff, but in a funny way where it's like, oh, I, you know, most people would probably feel uncomfortable doing that. but we're going to have a very transparent and open and honest conversation and like, oh, wow, isn't that weird to see and experience? But like these characters are so down to earth and relatable, and they all have a very like, I don't know, translatable experience about them to like the real world. I feel like I haven't talked in like 8 years.
We haven't heard you in that long.
I know. I'm like, what are thoughts again? Jeez.
Yeah, but you could totally see yourself in Chevy Chase's shoes and Vacation or Christmas Vacation. You can totally
Especially driving next to
Christy Brinkley? Yes, I can see myself in that shoe.
You could totally see yourself in Steve Martin's shoes at the rental counter at any holiday, any vacation you're trying to do. Oh, like, you're that guy screaming at the rental agent, like that rental agent has, you know, it's so relatable as to the human condition. And I think that's the difference between movies that are polished and glammed up versus just, like Amanda was saying, just real talk.
Wow, that was a really good way to say that everything I was hoping to say, but condensed. And I never thought I would tell you that you were condensed in your speaking until I started rambling.
All I can think about is you can start by wiping that fucking dumbass smile off those rosy fucking cheeks. Then you give me a fucking automobile, a fucking Datsun, a fucking Toyota, a fucking Mustang, blah, blah, blah. I just, that whole thing is.
Is anyone even going to be able to hear anything you say, or is it all going to be bleeped out?
I might bleep it. You're fucked. Yeah.
He's going to pull the actual clip.
I probably will. I'll have to. I mean, that's, if you're going to play a clip, right? That is
right. That's the clip to play for sure.
That one or those aren't pillows.
Let's earn the explicit tag. You never know. God, that's funny.
And it's quotable. These movies are quotable. That's the thing too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So we're gonna talk about our
music, the soundtracks, guys. Go. How did we not even talk about the soundtracks? Amazing soundtracks, like the best 80s soundtracks. Oh my gosh, he just consistently hit it every time.
Oh yeah.
When I did 80s soundtracks, like I was riding in the car with my 16-year-old's friends, and they're talking about these movies and the soundtracks, and it's like, are you guys like my friends, or are you my son's friend? Like, I don't understand what's going on here.
You want to know a true story? You know who introduced me to the Beatles? Was Ferris Bueller's Day Off. John Hughes introduced me to the Beatles.
That's kind of sad. Maybe don't admit that.
No, it's true, man. I was like a young teenager. I was more into rap and R&B and stuff, so didn't really get into old classics. And then all of a sudden, bam, there it is, Shake It Up Baby Now. And all of a sudden I'm diving down the Beatles catalog because of it.
Hey, classics don't necessarily have to be old. They can just be classics.
True.
Okay, we don't need to, like, you know, time bound things.
Pretty wild times. Favorite movies that didn't make the final eight? Anything you want to talk? Amanda, you were really big on one in particular.
Oh, so yeah.
Do you want to discuss
it? Oh, I would love to talk about this.
Okay.
I don't even think most people know that this is a John Hughes movie, because you don't think of it instinctually. I think a lot of people are just, you know, they think about The Breakfast Club and they think about
Beethoven.
Or that. I don't think so, but Flubber, guys, I love that movie.
Why?
Why? Because it's Robin Williams being hilarious and funny, and it's weird. It's so weird. To be fair, devil's advocate, I haven't seen it for probably like 10, 15 years, but I used to watch it a lot.
I thought it was terrible when it came out, but is it just because you watched it as a kid? Fun with or?
It could be. Maybe it's like a nostalgia factor. I have no idea. Maybe that was like my John Hughes soiree into his movies. But yeah, he was, I don't know. He's just, he knows how to bring alive actors. He just has a way of doing that. And Robin Williams in that movie, that's like one of my favorite performances of his for whatever reason.
The funny thing is that that's actually like a reboot or republish of the original 1961 film, The Absolute
Professor. Don't care about that one.
He did several reboots.
What?
He did Miracle on 34th Street, 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, and I love that one.
Yeah,
he That's did another several. One that I like kind of grew up on.
What we're saying is that Amanda likes the remakes of like old classics, as Aaron likes to call them.
Uh-huh. I do. At least those movies, those ones were fun.
Okay.
The movies that I like that didn't make the list, I think Dutch is one of them that is probably one of my favorite Thanksgiving stories. There's just something really great about it. I really enjoy that movie. And Ed O'Neill is fantastic. It's just a good time. So it's one of the ones that I was disappointed that didn't make it to the top 10. And I have a weird love for Mr. Mom. I used to watch Mr. Mom all the time. And I thought,
pretty surprised that one didn't finish higher in the poll, honestly.
Yeah, I'm surprised too. Amanda, I'm surprised you don't love Mr. Mom, because one of your favorite people from Critical Role is in Mr. Mom.
I've never seen it, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, it's one of Taliesin Jaffe's first.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's one of his first roles.
That's hilarious. I'm going to have to watch that now and see him as like a little kid.
I think Mr. Mom is just one of those movies where I don't think it's had the lasting effect a lot of the other John Hughes movies have. So it's more like it doesn't mean that it's not beloved. It's just not beloved as much. And he's got a lot of movies that are beloved.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's getting his own movie battle royale. He's got a few, you know,
to say the least.
I'm just glad our John gets to talk about Dutch, because I know we gave him so much shit when we did the holiday movie battle royale. You brought Dutch to the equation. I was like, who watches Dutch except for Arjun?
Literally, Arjun and Ed O'Neill just to force his family to watch it at Christmas. So somebody has to watch it, you know?
I'm in good company. Ed O'Neill's awesome.
He is a cool dude.
I'm just shocked that Vacation and The Great Outdoors didn't make the cut.
I'm not shocked about Great Outdoors, but I am shocked about Vacation.
Dude, the old 96er? Come on.
Yeah, I don't think that movie's as beloved as people think it is either. I like it, but it's not great.
It's a great watch.
So 16 Candles didn't make it either. 16 Candles.
That's another one. Yeah, that one I'm really surprised by.
I am not a 16 Candles and Pretty in Pink fan.
Well, I guess.
Why? You're
giving your votes away early, huh?
Yeah. Sure.
Spoiler alert.
Well, Pretty in Pink is a classic, man. I mean, it might not be for you, but it's a classic.
Yeah, well, but Vacation's we'll classic. Get there. I mean, come on. Vacation's awesome.
And plus, Pretty in Pink has Andrew Dice Clay in it, in case you didn't know. Fun fact. And nobody really seems to care.
But we're waiting for you to talk about it later.
Oh!
You're the last fan of Andrew Dice Clay.
I think I might have been the only for a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time.
I'm okay with it. All right, now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. All right, the John Hughes Movie Battle Royale. If you've never listened before, well, right before this, there was a whole introduction in terms of like how this thing works. But this time what we did is we did a poll in our Facebook group, and all of the listeners decided what the final 8 films were going to be. We actually, because it's John Hughes, so there's a very select amount of films. Let's let the listeners decide. Bam, top 8 made the list. So we're debating these 8 films. We've all chosen our particular favorites, and we're going to tell you why we believe all of them deserve to be the best John Hughes movie ever. But what we do is we break it into Ho North, that's Troy and myself, and Ho South, that's John and Amanda, because Amanda moved. She's no longer in Ho North. It's a very complicated thing, but if you listen to the last episode, you probably understand. Last movie, Battle Royale. So let's get into John Hughes and the first 2 films. Troy, what are the 2 films you think we should be voting best movie of John Hughes' career?
Well, John Hughes is one person that does holidays right. And the 2 that I have picked are both holidays, yet different holidays in their own rights. And the first one we're going to talk about is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Been under my skin since New York, starting with ripping off my cab.
God, you're a tight ass.
How'd you like a mouthful of teeth?
Oh, and hostile, too. Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant. That's borderline criminal.
Screw you. You spilled beer all over the bed. You smoke. You mess up the bathroom.
Well, who let you stay in the room? I even let you pay for it so you wouldn't feel like an intruder, which you most certainly are.
Oh, I'm an intruder.
Yes, you're an intruder. I was having a perfectly nice trip until you walked into my life.
I walked into your life. Who was that who talked my ear off on the plane? Who was that? I'm curious.
Well, who told you to book a room? I did, out of the goodness of my dumb old heart.
Boy, you're an ungrateful jackass. Well, go ahead, sleep in the lobby, see if I care. I hope you wake up so stiff you can't even move.
You're no saint.
Now, in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, for those that don't know, Neil Page is an advertising executive on a business trip in New York City, eager to return home to his family in Chicago 2 days before Thanksgiving. But unfortunately, there's just a whole bunch of mess that happens because you can't get to the airport. And then the airport, they finally get to the airport and the airplane runs into problems. And then so then have to take a train and then the train has problems. So they get in a car and then the car has problems. And then they got to ride in a refrigeration truck and hilarity ensues because along the way, Steve Martin in his journeys has to run into one John Candy and the two of them make comedy gold in this Thanksgiving holiday classic. The thing with this one is that filming for this actually only lasted 85 days to get this one accomplished. And a lot of it was mostly not done in the Chicago area. There was actually one scene in Braidwood, Illinois at the Sun Motel that was actually done in the area. But for the most part, this is a John Hughes film not done in the North Shore of the Chicago area. The movie did open to theaters in November of 1987. And it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving that weekend and finished third for the weekend, grossing $7 million after its first 5 days. The film had grossed $10 million, but it stayed in the top 10 for 7 weeks and finished its 12-week American run on the January 22nd with $49 million on a production budget of $15 million. So this one is really, really well done. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds an approval rating of 92% still to this day. It's just amazing how this one just warms the hearts every Thanksgiving year. It's kind of one of the staples that you turn on and say, hey, we're all sitting down and watching Planes, Trains, and Automobiles either on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday of that weekend when football's not on. It's like a tradition to sit and watch Steve Martin loses ever-living mind at the rental counter. And of course, John Candy just tried to lighten everything up. And so you get the big twist at the end of the movie, which just brings tears to everybody's face. And that is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Second movie fast forwards a few weeks to the wonderful Christmas season and one Kevin McAllister, who is home alone.
Harry?
Where the hell did you take your shoes off?
Why the hell are you dressed like a chicken?
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me! You guys give up or you're thirsty for more?
For those that don't know, Home Alone is a story of a young boy who is mistakenly left home for Christmas as his whole family, relatives, nephews, nieces, and the lot decide to go on a trip very, very far away. And because of that trip is left behind due to some antics that happened the night right before the trip where Kevin and his mother get into a fight. Kevin then has to figure out how to live on his own until the parents realize that they left him behind and defend his home from the wet bandit burglars that are trying to break into the home. He also has to deal with a man, an old man, Marley, who lives down the street, which has a whole thing behind him about being the shovel, the killer, creepy dude that the kids are all afraid of in the neighborhood. And of course, as John Hughes does, weaves this perfectly into a story where the old man and Kevin actually bond at a scene where you get the wonderful Christmas carols playing in the background. The music and score for this movie is just on point. They actually were trying to get a completely different composer for this film, and it turned out that John Hughes had to actually make a quick call to Steven Spielberg, who quick called John Williams, and then John Williams actually came in to save the composing duties, and John Williams crafts a magnificent score where you can actually hear Kevin's theme, and there's a house theme, and then there's Old Man Marley's theme, and Old Man's Marley's theme kind of shows up in a few places where you just know that when you hear the theme that Marley's right around the corner, and it just works so perfectly. Home Alone was filmed in the Chicago area in Winnetka. You can go see the house. It was turned into a Lego set, actually, so you can buy the Home Alone house as a Lego set. And Home Alone grossed $285 million United States and Canada, and had $190 million in other countries for a worldwide gross of just under $500 million on a budget of only $18 million. In its opening weekend, Home Alone made back that budget easily, and it was just a massive hit. Spawned off two more movies after that, and then a fourth one eventually. So if you love Kevin McAllister fighting off the wet bandits, and you want to be a filthy animal, then this is the one we should vote for, as Home Alone takes Christmas every single year. With that, voting is now open. Amanda, since you've been gone for so long, we'll go to you to cast the first votes of okay. whether or not Christmas or Thanksgiving rules the roost of the holiday season.
So I'm really curious where you guys are going to go with this, but my vote is for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I think I like the comedy a lot better. It's obviously a bit more adult, and I think it's more fun. I am not one who rewatches Home Alone every year. I'll watch it seldomly. So I've probably watched it like maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 times in my life. It's not like a tradition for me.
Arjun.
I'm going to have to go with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because primarily because of the movies, I find it to be the better movie and the one that I get annoyed with the least of all of the movies. And it doesn't have, kids, wet bandits, or anything in it. So, yeah.
Boy, what a sales pitch.
What kind of bitch-ass statement was it?
This is part for Arjun, though.
He just shit
right?
on Arjun, everything about John Hughes.
He did. It's the one I get least annoyed with. It's the least awful one, you know?
These terrible movies y'all are making me
watch. I'm just talking about these two movies, because I find Home Alone to be wildly annoying.
Okay. You get what
I can give you that.
Aaron.
Okay, so my opinion doesn't matter, but I here you go. Here's a little behind the scene, behind baseball, inside baseball. What do they call it? Yeah, inside baseball.
Yeah, so, I don't know where you were going.
I don't either. But every time we do a movie battle royale, I specifically put all the movies in a certain order because I have to arrange the clips before the episode, before I edit it. Troy, almost defiantly, has to always read them the opposite way every freaking time. And I'm now convinced you do this on purpose, sir. You do it on purpose. And it just hurts.
He's nose-gozing right now.
Yeah, that hurts. So the winner here is not Home Alone, although it's a fine Christmas film. It is not something I watch every year. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is something I will watch every single year. And it... Not only is it a wonderful film, wonderful talents. You have John Candy at his finest, Steve Martin doing his best Steve Martin, and that tirade at the rental car. So as someone who has traveled a lot in his life, I feel in my bones. it hits me. And I love the ending. It is probably, of all of John Hughes' films, the most impactful ending for me because I pretty much weep at the end of that movie every single time. Mm-hmm. Once you realize you don't understand somebody unless you understand their journey. I think it's an important thing to take away from anything because we're always so judgmental, especially today. That film is really painting a picture like you think you know this guy the whole time, but if you really look at him, he just wants someone to care. He just wants to be part of someone's life. And, you know, he does it the way he does it. He means well. You know, sometimes things don't go the way you want them to go to. And Steve Martin is actually pretty much a dick through most of the movie to this poor man. And that movie is really bringing them both together to kind of reach a unison, a middle ground that I think is just beautiful. And especially male friendship that doesn't really, especially at that time in terms of film, really you didn't see close friendships that were male like that. So that one wins. Sorry, it's a long explanation, but I don't care. That film deserves it.
It's a good one.
Okay, so Planes, Trains, and Automobiles moves on. Troy, now, are you disappointed by that?
Not at all.
Okay.
I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I watch it religiously on Thanksgiving at some point over the weekend.
All right. So we're going to hop on over to my lane, and we're going to start with Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Please, do not yank my cord on this. How desperate is the situation?
Well, did you see Alien? When that creature was in that guy's stomach? It kind of feels like that. Freshman.
Goddamn, are you kidding?
No, of course I'm not kidding. Do I sound like I'm kidding?
Who's he talking to?
Ferris Bueller, do you know him?
Yeah, he's getting me out of summer school.
We appreciate you letting us know how you're doing. We got a buzz. Keep a good thought, dude.
Thanks.
Shit, I hope he doesn't die. Can't handle summer school.
I don't really know how much money it made. I didn't look at it, and I don't care. I'm talking about the lasting impact this film has had over generations. If you've ever wanted to skip school, and you have, if you're listening to this, you have. If you've ever even thought about it, this movie tells you how to do it right. It's really like an instruction manual to have a great day. And I think that's important for kids, because guess what? I'm going to tell you something your parents won't tell you. It's important to skip school for yourself every now and again. Not often, not frequently, just once in a while. Live life for yourself. Be safe and all that other stuff. The idea that this kid skipped school as creatively as he did, stole his friend's parents' car, that was probably horrible, had the best day ever, pretty much trashed his friend's dad's car, also horrible, but took part in a parade, went to a Cubs game, faked out this principal, who not only is he a dickhead in the movie, turns out he's a dickhead in real life. So this worked out great. Ferris Bueller wins on all counts. And it's just a absolutely beautiful film. Fun fact, the parents of Ferris, they got married in real life. Yeah, sure did. How fun is that? They also got divorced. So what are you going to do?
Another weird sales pitch.
Just a weird fun fact. There's a great cameo from Charlie Sheen in this movie. It's just something that's always fun to watch. It's a great soundtrack. It's literally Matthew Broderick at his best. Alan Ruck, it just creates that friend that we all have, that very socially awkward, but just needs somebody to get a foot in his ass to get him moving kind of guy. And then, of course, the perfect girlfriend in Mia Sara. So Ferris Bueller's Day Off is my first pick, and it's a fantastic film that has lasted generations for kids that have always wanted to skip school. And my second movie is Uncle Buck.
But I know a good kid when I see one. Because they're all good kids. Until dried out, brain dead skags like you drag them down and convince them they're no good. You so much as scowl at my niece or any other kid in this school and I hear about it, I'm coming looking for you. Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
The best thing I could say about Uncle Buck is it created that line about, here's a quarter, go find a rat to gnaw that thing off your face. I think that's timeless and honestly deserves to be quoted far more often than it is. But it's also about a family where an uncle is seen as, you know, he's not top notch. He's not really the best parent. His sister is really worried about putting her brother, Uncle Buck, John Candy, in charge of their kids, of her kids, because they have to leave. And it turns out to be a wonderful endeavor because they get some life lessons. They get to learn how to be accepted. He's very open in terms of his acceptance of his nieces and nephews. He really embraces their oddities, their quirkiness, and he really showcases that you don't have to be a perfect parent to be someone who loves these kids. And I really think this is a hard movie to duplicate without John Candy. It's just something where he has the personality that's perfect for Uncle Buck. And it's a role that definitely you could have seen him continuing in so many other avenues after his passing. Uncle Buck is a great film. So of the two, you've got Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Uncle Buck. What say you, Amanda?
Yeah, this is an easy one for me. I'm going Ferris Bueller.
Because you wanted to skip school.
I'm not a big fan of
Uncle
Buck.
Wow.
I did skip school a few times, quite a few times.
Did you ever skip the month of October? Then you're an amateur.
Nope. Sounds like you did, though.
Amateur.
I missed half of senior year. Does that count?
Yeah.
Or junior year.
Yeah. But it was probably because you were late.
But I still passed. Ha 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 ha. You're so funny.
All right. John.
Bueller. Bueller. That's my pick. And just so that we're all clear, never skipped a day of school in my life.
Aww. Are you serious?
I'm serious. Never skip.
They literally, don't they give every senior class like a skip day? Like, isn't there like an established skip day?
There is an established skip day. I still didn't skip.
Wow.
You don't get extra points for that.
I know, but, you know,
unless you count virginity points.
Like everybody else, like they were going out and they were having fun. I was kind of stuck because like nobody had my back.
Oh, you were Uncle Buck. Or no, I'm sorry. You were Alan Ruck. I was
Alan Ruck
in my head. How's it feel to be Alan Ruck in real life? Did you get that sweet sports car?
Well, I have a sweet Jeep, so I got that working
for
me.
There you go. Troy, how does it feel to know that you get to make the decision here?
I mean, it's great. Like, I love Uncle Buck. I think it's a great family telling. I think it's great and sweet how he evolves over the course. The backfiring of the car is always iconic. John Candy is probably one of his best in that movie because it gives us more of the dramatic side versus his comedic side. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because Ferris Bueller is freaking awesome. I mean, come on. Like, everything about Ferris Bueller is just cool. Even the case where you get the fourth wall breakage at the end of the movie and you're like, what? What's happening right now? He's talking to me. He's talking to me. He's my friend. Oh my gosh. Ferris is my friend.
It's so iconic that Deadpool ripped it off years later.
Yeah.
Love it.
Classic.
Okay. Ferris Bueller. Another clean sweep. Woohoo. Now I move on to Host South. John, you've got an interesting collection here.
I do have an interesting collection, which is perfect for somebody like me. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with my first movie, and it's going to be Christmas Vacation.
If any of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me, I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight. I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Christmas Vacation is an awesome holiday movie we all love. It's directed by Jeremiah S. Chechik and written by John Hughes, based on the story Christmas of 59. Even though it wasn't directly helmed by John Hughes, it's still hailed as one of his greatest works for a bunch of reasons. You've got hilarious jokes, the crazy slapstick scenes, and totally relatable Griswold family dealings with all the chaos of the holidays. Plus, it got this funny way of poking fun of the commercialized aspects of Christmas and how much that's gotten out of the way or gotten blown out of the water, while also reminding us the importance of family and togetherness. And let's not forget those touching moments that make you want to hug the loved ones so tight. Since its release in 1989, Christmas Vacation has become a timeless classic, and it's ever so quotable. Year after year, people still quote this movie, and that's why it is my first choice. My second choice to add up the weird is Weird Science.
Lady, I want to get to the bottom of this ASAFP.
Oh, so do I.
But first, I'd like to butter your muffin.
Why do you have to be such a wanker?
Because I get off on it.
Now, I want you to promise that you'll keep your big mouth shut about everything that has happened here this weekend. And I want you to treat Wyatt and Gary with dignity and respect.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, really. I can be a real serious bitch if I don't get what I want.
Ooh, hit me with your best shot.
While Weird Science is certainly a beloved John Hughes film, many fans and critics argue that it might not be his best. However, it holds a special place in the hearts for many for several reasons. First off, it embodies the quintessential 80s teen movie vibe with a mix of humor, sci-fi fantasy, and the coming of age themes. The premise of two socially awkward teens creating their ideal woman using a computer is both hilarious and fantastical, providing ample opportunities for comedic situations and memorable moments. Additionally, Weird Science captures the essence of teenage longing and desire for acceptance, making it relatable to audiences of all ages. Moreover, the film is a standout performance from its cast, including Anthony Michael Hall, Ian Mitchell Smith, who perfectly portray endearing nerds, Gary and Wyatt. Ultimately, Weird Science may not be John Hughes' most critically acclaimed film, but it is a unique blend of comedy and fantasy and heartfelt storytelling moments in its beloved cult classic in his filmography. I have a special place in my heart for this movie. I always feel like Gary or Wyatt, just because, you know, nobody really liked them too much and they felt pretty much alone and always had themselves to get them through it. So that's why I chose this one. So as it's my choice, it's my turn to go around the dial to see who it is that I want to go first. And that's going to be Troy. What say you?
I mean, I love Kelly LeBrock. I loved RDJ. I love Bill Paxton, even as a giant pile of shit. I mean, all of it is just so much fun when you think about Weird Science and what it was able to do. And especially when you have the giant nuclear missile that gets put in the middle of the freaking house. I mean, there's just so many. The biker scene, when the bikers come in, that is such a cool scene too. And then all the furniture that gets spewed on the lawn and sucked back into the house. I mean, there are just so many good, memorable scenes and moments from Weird Science. Christmas Vacation is a hard one. This is a quintessential classic, quotable. Everybody remembers, you know, Chevy Chase's line at the end. I think I even quoted it on this very podcast during our holiday movie Battle Royale. This is a hard one because, like, Hughes wasn't directly involved with Christmas Vacation, so it's hard to.
He wrote it. John, I mean, we're counting screenplays.
Yeah.
So.
He wrote it, yeah, but it's like you don't think of Christmas Vacation as a John Hughes movie, you know? For what Hughes stood for as far as like teenage angst and teenage breaking out of the shell and mold and discovering yourself and all of those types of things and the human condition, you know, Christmas Vacation just seemed like it was a carry-on of all the other vacation movies, even though it was done at a Christmas time and actually probably a little bit better than some of the other vacation movies, but there's just something about Weird Science that says, like, it's more John Hughes than Christmas Vacation to me. So for that reason, I'm going to go Weird Science over Christmas Vacation. Only in this context of a John Hughes battle royale. As a movie, Christmas Vacation wins hands down. But I feel Weird Science is more John Hughes represented.
I did not see that coming. Might be because I tuned half of that out, but I did not see that coming. Aaron,
Go to Amanda if you would.
I'm sorry. I was gonna pass,
I'm
and then
formulating.
You, whatever.
I'm formulating.
Fine. Amanda.
So I originally was gonna say Christmas Vacation because I like the movie more, but Troy made a really good point about this being a John Hughes movie battle royale, and I agree. He does stand for teen angst and coming of age, and I am gonna have to go with Weird Science for that reason. That was, you swayed me, and I really didn't think, because I'm not crazy about Weird Science, like, it's fine, it's funny, I know there's like a lot of really good lines and everything in there, but it's just not like my movie that I would go and rewatch a bunch. But in this context, I'm with you.
I did not have Amanda siding with Troy on my 2024 bingo card post eclipse.
That's only because she hasn't been here for most of 2024.
I-N-G-O.
All right, Aaron.
Bingo was his name.
Well, I mean, my nuts are halfway up my ass, but other than that, this is perfect. there you go. That's a fun one from Weird Science. I love that movie. I love it. And that's why I was going to let the Christmas Vacation love go, but apparently that didn't come. It's, and you didn't even mention Oingo Boingo. I still have that song on my run mix. I literally hear it every time I run.
Every time.
Every single time. Weird. Science. I'm sorry. Look, my dad will be upset if he listens to this episode, which he won't. But that's Christmas Vacation is his favorite, I think his favorite movie, or second favorite movie. Aliens is his favorite movie. He freaking loves this movie, and I hear about it all the time, and I like it. But I've seen it more because of my dad than I have because I enjoy it. It's a Christmas staple that I think is entertaining, but it doesn't do anything for me. And I watch Weird Science because I freaking enjoy it. I just, even though the effects are not great, the premise is, I mean, it does not hold up in this day and age, and it's probably offensive on 14 different levels, and I just don't care. I freaking love this movie. I think it's hysterical. And I love seeing old RDJ back when he was in his prime as a ridiculous teenager. And God, I mean, you can't go wrong with, you know, the entire cast. Anthony Michael Hall is awesome. And you've got Chet. Dear God, you've got Bill Paxton as freaking Chet, which is a ridiculous character. And of course, Kelly LeBrock, which is, I mean, if you were, to be perfectly honest, if you were a boy in a teenage roughly in the 80s, you knew exactly who Kelly LeBrock was. And this was your kind of movie.
If you had a pulse in the 80s.
Because this is kind of what boys, if I could create a perfect woman and pick a Kelly LeBrock would come out. And I love the fact that neither one of them ever really have sex with her, but that's the entire reason they created her. Because secretly, they're gentlemen.
Have you showered with them? Oh, it's amazing.
It's funny. It's Weird Science. Clean sweep. Did you see that coming?
I didn't see this shit coming. And I actually paid attention to you through the whole thing you were saying. So I did not see this coming. All right. Well, I guess that's Weird Science. And I did not see that on my bingo card today. Go ahead, Amanda.
I also didn't see this coming, that Amanda would get the one that's actually like the oldest films out of all of these.
So the first one is The Breakfast Club.
Is that clear, Mr. Bender?
Crystal.
Good. Maybe you'll learn a little something about yourself. Maybe you'll even decide whether or not you care to return.
I can answer that right now, sir. You know, that'd be no for me, because...
Sit down, Johnson.
Thank you, sir.
My office is right across that hall. Any monkey business is ill-advised. Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question. Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe?
I'll give you the answer to that question, Mr. Bender, next Saturday. Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
The Breakfast Club, for anyone who doesn't know what the movie is, shame on you. Go watch it immediately, and you're welcome. But it is about all of these different stereotype high schooler students who are locked in detention together, and they start to understand more about each other and realize that even though you have these assumptions, preconceived notions about what that person's stereotype means, you know, she's the catty pretty girl, or he's, you know, the big jock bully, or he's the nerd, things like that. She's the weirdo witch lady. All of those different ideas that you have in your head, and you understand, okay, we are so different on the outside, right? But then you start to learn, just as we all do as humans, how much we have in common at the end of the day, that everybody around you is going through some form of struggle, especially as you're going through your teenage years and you're trying to find yourself, and, you know, issues at home, issues in school, pressures from around you, whatever traumas you have, like everybody has something. And it was such a powerful message from The Breakfast Club for you to recognize that. And one of the best parts about it, in my opinion, is that there is literally a character that every single person can connect to from their high school experience, from any other schooling experience. And they can connect people from their experiences that, you know, maybe it wasn't them, but they're like, yeah, I can say that this character here was exactly like Billy in high school or whomever it was. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's so fun. And then you pair it with an amazing soundtrack with all of these incredibly relatable, funny, and entertaining characters, some of the most notorious scenes from John Hughes movies. And it's just so fun and entertaining while also being incredibly real. So, Eat My Shorts. That's my first one. My second is Pretty in Pink.
You really pissed me off, you know, because, you know, they shit all over everybody, including you. I can't believe you'd be this stupid.
Who's shitting on me? I'm not going to let anybody shit on me.
He's going to use your ass and throw you away. God, I would have died for you.
So what am I supposed to do? He asked me out and I like him. If I hate him because he's got money, just listen to me. If I hate him because he's got money, that's the exact same thing as them hating us because we don't. Do you understand?
You can't do this and respect yourself. You can't.
Well, I'll make that decision, all right?
Sure, you can do what you want.
You know, you're talking like that just because I'm going out with Blaine.
Blaine? His name is Blaine? Oh, that's a major appliance. That's not a name.
Pretty in Pink may not be everybody's favorite, but it is one of Molly Ringwald's best performances, arguably. She manages to capture a very complicated and complex character who is dealing with her own struggles of being accepted in society, shielding who she feels, you know, she's embarrassed to be, and all of that surrounding with like teen angst and love and romance. And so she's torn between these two guys. One seems kind of nice. The other one is like this, you know, richer guy and she's poor. And so it's her navigating the world of class and how different everyone's world perspectives, experiences, mindsets are. And this is the beauty of John Hughes, right? Being able to tap into all of those very humanistic sorts of things that we go through, that everybody went through as a youth. On top of that, you got John Cryer, James Spader, Annie Potts. Amazing performances, great one-liners, and overall, some really fun fashion for the ladies. That's my second choice, Pretty in Pink. So I'm going to start with Aaron, because you keep putting yourself on the back burner for decisions. So between The Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink, what's your vote?
I think Pretty in Pink is an important film for a lot of people. And I love the cast that's cemented in there. I mean, Molly Ringwald and John Cryer and Andrew McCarthy and Jane Spader, the people you talked about. And of course, Andrew Dice Clay.
Of course.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same appeal as The Breakfast Club. There's just something about, it's literally a timeless film. There aren't many of those in the world. Like, Breakfast Club is a timeless film. Now, I will say John Hughes has more of these timeless films than any other writer I can think of off the top of my head, except maybe Tarantino. Yeah, I said it. He had an ability to tap in to creating characters that were more, they were more an archetype, but also a lasting version of such, if that makes any sense. Where, you know, yes, Breakfast Club is very much the jock, the rebel, the prom queen, you know, da-da-da-da, whatever bracket you want to put them in. And then he just told a story about every one of them have their own issues. It's no different than real life, because we all went to high school. We all dealt with people who were fit and neatly in those brackets, the jock, the rebel, whatever. But they had their own issues. They had things going on. And if you really pay attention to a lot of his films, but especially that one, what he's trying to say is, listen, shut up, and just listen. Because the person you think you see in front of you has a lot more going on than what you have seen so far, than what you're paying attention to. You're focused on the outer layer. You know, you're focused on nothing but visuals. You know, you're just looking at the outside, the fleshy coating. There's a lot going on inside, and that's what Breakfast Club was about. It was about getting people to look beyond that coating and seeing the person that resides under the stereotype. And that's why it's a fantastic, timeless film.
beautiful explanation. Arjun?
Yeah, it was a really good explanation. I'm going to make it so much easier by just saying I can count on one hand how many times I've seen Pretty in Pink, and I can't count how many times I've seen Breakfast Club because it's been that many. Mm-hmm. I love it. I enjoy it. I feel connected to more people on that movie than in Pretty in Pink, so that's why I'm going to say Breakfast Club.
And to you, Mr. Troy. Just
mine
curious.
Doesn't matter, but obviously Judd Nelson all the way.
Yeah. Just bump at the end.
He has his arm up. You can't see it, but he's got his arm up.
He's fist bumping in the air.
Don't you forget about Judd.
Don't you forget about Judd. Man, that last shot. Walking off the football field. Like, no. There nothing beats that.
And truly.
And if people wonder why we're not playing the songs throughout this episode, it's because that'll get this podcast shut down. Yep. Sorry. Can't do it.
Unless you want to go to patreon.com/ the Hollywood Outsider to help pay for the legal fees that we would incur.
Or we could do it there. Means. We can go play them on Patreon. They don't care on Patreon.
Aaron doesn't like editing, so don't give him ideas like this.
Yes, this is true. I like how you say I don't like over editing. You know? I don't like excessive editing. Just keep it light. Keep it tight. Okay, so we are moving on. We've got our finals. Now we move into the whole North finals, which is we have Planes, Trains, and Automobiles set up against Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And keep in mind, any ties, because we all forget to vote now, are settled by the poll that we took in the Facebook group. And it is definitive, so I know what's going to win if there's a tie. So let's go to... We'll go to John and Amanda first, since they are in the South. What do you pick between Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, John?
That's a tough call. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Amanda.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know we were starting this way today, but here's chaos for you. Yeah, I'm not picking Ferris Bueller.
Okay.
I like Ferris Bueller. I think it's a fun movie, but there's just no way that's going to come over Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That quippy dialogue. My goodness.
Troy.
From a John Hughes movie battle royale perspective.
Oh, now you want to go back to this. Okay,
John Hughes also wrote Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, man.
I know.
And directed.
Yeah.
That's why it's like they're two different movies for two different reasons. One makes you laugh hysterically and you just quote all day with your buddies, and the other one just freaking gut punches you at that final scene.
One's adult, one's teenage. Yep. That's what I feel the main difference is.
True story.
What do I think could take down the other side, though?
Oh, he's strategizing. Mm-hmm. Do you see this right now?
It should be what you think is the winner, Troy. That's what the answer
is. They're both winners. These two are really great films.
I also want to remind you that if it's your pick that ends up winning, you didn't win shit. The movie won.
John, I swear to Christ, if you have to bring this up every episode, I'm going to start dick punching you from afar. You don't win. The movie wins. It's just the movie. The person that picked them doesn't win.
He finally got it. He was admitting to finally getting it.
I don't think he was. I think he was throwing up some petty sidebar. That's what he was doing.
It could be a little bit of column A and column B, you know.
Why not both?
He's filling the time while I make my decision to go with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Wow. Okay. Well, here it is, kids. Those are two fantastic films. And I will be perfectly honest, I probably watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles more now than Ferris Bueller. That said,
whoa.
Ferris Bueller was my idol.
Whoa.
Like, I really looked up to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I think we are spiritual twins in many respects. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm much more a Judd Nelson than I am a Ferris Bueller, but I love the God tier level he played that game. So it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off for me.
Dude, all I can say is that one of our Patreon supporters, Josh Steima, is going to be so mad. And I love this.
Well, that's what happens. You know, you got to pick what you think is the best one. So
that's crazy. I'm serious, Aaron. I never expected you to pick Ferris over Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I feel like I don't know you at all. You're a stranger.
I watched that movie. I've probably seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off over 100 times. Easily.
God, I knew you liked it. I didn't know you liked it that much.
When I was a kid, I rewatched it on VHS, bitches, over so much I had to buy a new tape.
Oh, I love that for you.
Yeah, it was, I loved it.
His first girlfriend was named Shauna.
Jesus.
Or at least that's what he called her.
So, because we have a tie, we go to the poll, right?
Oh!
And the poll says, Ferris Bueller's Day Off versus Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, that's easy.
20% to 11%. Ferris Bueller moves on. Oof.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now we go. So Ferris Bueller's moving to the next round. Ooh. Ooh. It's getting sexy in here. Ho South. We've got Weird Science, which is a surprise, versus The Breakfast Club. Ooh. Now we're going to go north this time. Troy, you're having a whole lot of, are you having some contemplation problems? You want me to go first here? Will you think this through?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. I love Weird Science, but I already talked about The Breakfast Club and why that one I think is so pertinent. So Breakfast Club it is for me. Still bummed that more people don't know Oingo Boingo song, though, because it's so awesome.
I just recently rewatched The Breakfast Club. I have to say, wasn't that I was bored watching it, but it wasn't hitting the same way. Like, I laughed hysterically when I recently rewatched Weird Science. I mean, I just remembered all the good stuff about it and all the fun and just reliving my childhood. And it does have Oingo Boingo. I'm going to have to pick Weird Science from a John Hughes perspective here also. It just feels more...
He's really overusing this perspective now.
Yeah, you're really overusing it in this specific instance.
He's like using that to justify every single decision now.
And I think you're using it wrong, by the way.
This one I totally did.
You did. Yeah. You did.
It's like in terms of the John Hughes that he's known for. You mean like The Breakfast Club? No. Like
the John Hughes. Like the
no, he's
movie?
Known for Chet. The big... he's known for Chet, the lady sex doll. Yeah, that's what he's known for.
I loved Weird Science growing up. I love Weird Science now. I love
Dude, that is the
That's fine. Just
thing.
Say that. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it's like.
Leave John Hughes out of this.
I feel like you're going to be like, well, I just called John Hughes' widow, and she said Weird Science was the way to go.
She said that was really just the most appropriate for what he represents.
Exactly. Totally. All right, Amanda.
Yeah, this is way too easy for me, The Breakfast Club. Way too easy.
Johnny.
I'm gonna have to go with Weird Science.
Oh, so another tie?
Yep.
This is a lot less close.
I bet.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Like a lot.
Yeah, 21% Breakfast Club, 4% Weird Science.
That's hilarious.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying, no, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Nope. Which is funny that, hey, this is probably the way it should be. The top two we have left are literally neck and neck in the poll. So they are the top two in the poll, too. So this is the way it should have been. This is the way that it was destined. We have The Breakfast Club versus Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Which is your pick for the winner of the John Hughes Movie Battle Royale? Raise your hands if you want to go first. Troy, you waffle so much, you go first.
Well, we're going to be here for a little bit. I'm going to get comfortable.
I mean, the Sausage King of Chicago, in 2 weeks, you'd have a diamond. That's how it is in their family 9 times. But yet the heart and the tragedy and the camaraderie and the antics and the Breakfast Club.
Okay.
Dude, you should have seen the seriousness on his face. Like, he was making a decision to take someone off life support. Like, that's how serious it was.
Do I pull the plug on Aunt Linda? I just can't decide. I just don't. I don't know.
I don't want so Twist funny. And Shout to ever die.
Should I pull the plug on the Sausage King of Chicago? I don't know.
There could be only one, Aaron.
Oh. John, what do you got?
How can I draw this out? Yeah, I don't give a shit. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Really?
What? Yeah. Way over Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
You just have hate for the Breakfast Club, don't you?
It has Anthony Michael Hall, so I love Anthony Michael Hall, and I would love to give the Breakfast Club, or the Breakfast Club, the vote here, but I just can't, because of the two movies, the one that I will hands down always rewatch would be Ferris Bueller.
Okay. Amanda, what do you got?
See, the one that I would rewatch the most would be the Breakfast Club. And in addition to that, Ferris Bueller connects to a slimmer audience, whereas The Breakfast Club connects to everyone. It has more reach, more dynamic, more interesting, entertaining, and funny characters for you to enjoy a journey with, a better soundtrack. Sorry, hate to say it, but it's true.
That's wrong.
They're both equally good.
One has a better, memorable song, but I would say, oh yeah. Bow. That's just as memorable as Don't You Forget About Me.
I don't think it is.
In my world.
See, but also, The Breakfast Club spans across multiple generations in a way that Ferris Bueller cannot.
Mm.
Can't touch it. Can't touch this. No.
Not part of any of these movies.
Right. I disagree with all your points.
Okay. Bye, Felicia. You already spoke.
Damn.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, hey, let Aaron have his turn.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
What a divisive battle royale we're having.
That's an interesting... That's because these movies mean something to people. Like, they are...
Right.
They are pertinent to our lives as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They shaped us as human beings.
They did. Mm. That's deep stuff. You're welcome, John.
If this battle royale... Having to be Aaron's favorite movie battle royale, this would be going a different way. But this is the John Hughes movie battle royale, not Aaron's
movie so dramatic
battle royale. And since this is John Hughes movie battle royale, and
John, this is how you stretch it out.
And obviously, that's the most important thing, is trying to figure out exactly what that means.
Who are you, John?
I want this fucking breakfast.
He's not making fun of me. He's making fun of Troy, just like
about,
I did.
She was talking about John Hughes. John Hughes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's making fun of me.
Yeah, I was making fun of Troy.
But Aaron was trying to deliver a line from the movie.
I was, but John had to make it all about him. So that's cool. Son of a bitch. Enough! You've spoken! Get in the box! It's a Breakfast Club. It's absolutely the Breakfast Club. I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off. There's nothing about it I don't love. But in terms of John Hughes movies, and this is the John Hughes movie Battle Royale, this is the most John Hughes movie that ever John Hughes. It just is. All right, so the winner of the John Hughes movie Battle Royale is The Breakfast Club. It really just is. It covers all the bases, and it's universal. The thing that I think is funny is if you go to the poll, it is 21% to 20%. It is close as shit. So, Amanda, your argument that it doesn't stretch generations like Breakfast Club did is incorrect, ma'am. It's just not factually accurate.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know. Just because it's 20%, did you actually look at the ages of the people that answered?
Yeah, let's break down this data, Aaron. Also, we'd have to look at the demographic within the Facebook group. And since you guys are old as shit, it's probably all old as shit people, too, that I love. No hate. I'm just trying to shit on these guys.
Sounds ageist.
Hey, there's two people that voted for Flubber. How's that?
Who was the other person?
Tara T. You've got a friend for life.
Yes.
Woody has found their Buzz Lightyear.
I love that. The other one I was going to bring up is Made in Manhattan, but that would be embarrassing.
Oh my God. Just stop it. Okay, so John and I saw The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and that is Guy Ritchie's take on a true story about the British military and how they recruited a small group of highly skilled soldiers to strike against German forces behind enemy lines during World War II, basically to disrupt the supply chain line, right? Via the Water. And it stars Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson and Alex Pettyfer and Isaac Gonzalez, Carrie Elwes. There's a lot of people on here. Now, we were talking before we started recording this, Johnny. You felt like this is Guy Ritchie. Did you say playing jazz? Is that what you're saying?
When you watch a Guy Ritchie movie, you're used to a certain kind of pace, right? You're used to that, like, very fast, and it's kind of like a rock and roll pace, I would say, to it. But this is very different. This is Guy Ritchie doing jazz, because it's very much, you know, it's very cool.
What was that?
I was me trying to do that jazz thing. I can't, okay. I don't know what jazz sounds like, honestly, but it's very cool. The movie thinks it's very cool. It knows what it's doing as far as pacing is concerned. There's probably some moments that are drawn out a little too long, but yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think it kind of reminds me of. It's very much like jazz.
I feel like a lot of people are going to go into this expecting very much a Guy Ritchie heist movie, because I think that's what the commercials are painting that picture of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that. I don't think that's the movie. I mean, there is some of that element where you have the team coming together, but there are long periods of time where there is no action. I think people are going to expect that there's a lot going on, but it's much more of a dramatic piece than it is an action piece, I would say. There are moments of action, but I wouldn't call it this an action movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
no. Do you disagree with that? Or
I don't disagree with that at all. And I do agree that you go in thinking you're going to get what the preview shows you, and you will not be happy with that. But if you go in with an open mind and just appreciate the moment for what it is, which is the story of what ultimately becomes the grounding for what it seems to be the story of James Bond, that's what you'll end up getting.
Right, because if you didn't know, Ian Fleming was the writer of James Bond, and he was apparently on site. That's where he got the idea from, Gus March Phillips, who Henry Cavill plays, and ironically is kind of showing that maybe he would be a really good choice for James Bond in many respects.
Yeah. Ironically, yes, he would be kind of great as James Bond. This is a very different role than I'm used to for Henry Cavill. Usually he's like that stoic, strong,
very quiet.
Yeah. Quiet guy. That's not who he is here. He's cracking wise, and he's just playing along,
sticking his tongue out and going
randomly
for no reason whatsoever.
He's just great, and I love the bit. There's a great bit that he plays out. The one that surprised me is Alex Pettyfer, because I haven't seen him in forever, and yet he shows up here, and I'm like, I'm trying to place him. I'm like, why do I know this guy?
And then you're like, Magic Mike, that's the one.
Who ruined Magic Mike. He's the one that was in I Am Number 4 and was a douchebag there too. So hopefully he's no longer going to be a douchebag and he's going to start being cool in Hollywood. I don't know.
Possible. It is possible.
It is possible. But it's got a great cast too. Henry Golding surprised me. Hero Fiennes was awesome.
You know, this is the cool thing. When there's a conversation, let me chime in on the other elements that you've already talked about. So it's not just, you know, you reading through your monologue. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know, man. I just like the monologue.
I know. I agree. Henry Cavill
Can you hand me the soapbox every now and again? Is that possible?
No. Stay on task, man. Conversation. Henry Cavill, I agree, was very impressive in terms of this particular role. Alex Pettyfer didn't do much for me, honestly. I think he's very much in the background for a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Ritchson, who I love, obviously, beloved to me.
Mm-hmm.
In the action scenes, he's fantastic. I think, like, he's still got that charm, and he's got that, you know, million gigawatt smile that I think just lights up a room. His Swedish accent is terrible.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Absolutely terrible. I appreciate the effort, sir. But maybe just say you're Swedish and go on from there. And then we just do it like the Hunt for Red October. Like, yeah, sure, this Scotsman's Russian. All right, we're good.
Right.
But you know what's funny is he still works, though, because he's so charming on his own. And he's really the physical aspects. I mean, he nails, obviously. He still works, but man, his accent, every time he talked, I'm like, I get why they cut his lines back.
I go, what is
not a bad actor. It's not bad acting. It's just a bad accent. The accent is too, I can't really, you know, but it definitely, you know, takes a little bit away from the movie. So
well,
now back to Henry Golding or Richson, whichever one you want to talk about.
Well, it goes through the strength of his acting. Even with a bad accent, you're still enthralled by what he's doing on screen.
Yes, absolutely. He's still, you still wait for him to come back.
Right.
Like, when is he coming back? Please come back soon.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I liked his character a lot. And I think everybody here is pretty well cast and used to the proper levels. Because you do have Canville.
Who's Canville?
I don't know. You do have Cavill and Richson, who both on screen are a dynamic duo. Like, it is pretty huge what they do on screen together. Everybody else is kind of slips in where they fit in, but those two are just huge.
What did you think about Till Schweiger? He plays Heinrich Lohr, who's the villain of the piece.
He was dark.
Did it work for you then?
Yeah, it really worked for me. He was very just gross. Everything about him was gross. And I appreciated the fact that they just leaned into how just disgusting of a human being he is. I at no point did I ever go, oh, well, maybe there's something redeemable about him. Absolutely not. There isn't.
No, there wasn't much redeemable for him. So this is, again, it's much more of a drama with action elements than I would call this an action movie. It's Guy Ritchie trying to tell this story of this group of bandits, if you will, miscreants, military outliers that came together to thwart an aspect of the war that really made it. This is Churchill's design to make sure that this pipeline was disturbed so that, in essence, this would provoke Americans to get involved in the war, because to that point, we weren't really involved in it and they needed our assistance to really put Hitler down. And this brought, you know, America into it. So it is a cool story that was declassified just recently. So I did appreciate those elements. I don't think this is a fantastic movie. I just really enjoyed it. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare?
I give it $6.
What about you? I got $6.50. Still enjoyed it. Definitely some issues here and there, but I was never bored. I was entertained throughout.
Yeah. At no point do you sit there and start checking your watch. It is a good story.
Now, I do want to talk to you about, because it's been out now and you did not see it, but Civil War, which I kind of want to touch on this because a lot of people have talked about. We talked about it on our last podcast about this journey through a dystopian future America where there's a war raging, a civil war. California and Texas have buddied up. Nobody saw that coming. And they're united against, you know, the central forces. And so there is a terrible, terrible war going on. Now, I think you probably thought, and I did too, that this was going to be a film more about what happens when a civil war occurs, right? Like, that's kind of what your vibe was.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got.
It's not what it's about. And I found that fascinating. The movie that I saw is not the movie I expected to see. It is very much about war journalists and what it means to be a war journalist in today's America, because journalism is kind of seen as, well, that's not real. It's not factual. They're not, you know, taking careful strides to make sure that the information is true. Meanwhile, they're showing true war journalists from different sides of the picture. You know, you have Kirsten Dunst Lee, who is this, touted photographer who has captured countless pictures in war at the worst times. She's going to DC so she can meet with the president of the US, who apparently appointed himself for a third term. The actual surrounding elements of the war are very, very vague. So you don't really know the why. Why did the war start? How did this happen? You get like little pieces of it, but it's left very open-minded. And I think it's meant to be about as even keel as you can get in today's polarized environment. And so she's going to Washington to try to interrogate this president before he's either brought down or before he wins. We don't know which way it's going at the beginning of the movie. And Nick Offerman's the president. So it's her going, and as she gets closer to Washington it gets much more dangerous, and you see much more troubling elements of what would happen should we have a civil war. You see people that have military backgrounds, and they're playing different sides of this war. And you're also getting a different perspective of her own fellow photographers who are going with, and they're more on, they care more about the excitement, right? The thrill of taking these pictures and the elements, and kind of maybe even tweaking the elements to, you know, jazz up their pictures, where Lee, Kirsten Dunst's character, is very much about, I'm only going to take pictures that happen. I'm taking real pictures of real moments. I will not, you don't put yourself into the moment, right? That's a big mm-hmm. part of journalism, is you never become part of the story. Whereas she has colleagues that feel differently about this. So it's really a very harsh look at journalism and what it means to be a journalist in a modern America, as well as if there were a situation of civil war. And I wonder, you as someone who wanted nothing to do with it, does that change your interest in such a movie, or does it still, you just still don't want to have to see anything that's too close to what might be really happening in the world?
For me, it's, I listening to that, it piqued a little bit of interest, but at the same time, I can't sit there and feel comfortable with watching something like that. It's crazy. There's so many things that I will sit there and watch. But apparently on the list of things that really bother me is things that happen to animals, and then like let's pretend the United States is in a fight with itself. That's just, I can't do it. So yeah, no, I don't want to partake in that. I don't want to take any time with it. I just, you know, I can't. There's not enough ways for me to say no.
Fair enough. Okay. I think a lot of people are probably going to feel the same. But I just want to tell you, if you're interested in this, that's the movie that you're going to see. Kirsten Dunst, I think, is phenomenal. There's a scene with her husband, Jesse Plemons, that is probably one of the most unnerving things you're going to see this year. I mean, Jesse Plemons knows how to do dark. And he does it exceptionally well, exceptionally well. Overall, this is Alex Garland. He did Ex Machina. You know, he wrote Dread. He is writing the 28 Years Later trilogy right now. I mean, he's a very introspective writer. He really, really tries to put ideas into play to make you think about them. And he's not solving any of the dilemmas. He's letting you take in the information, put it out in the world how you feel. Like, it's thought-provoking. It's conversation starting. And I think we need more movies like that in the world. And this is definitely one of them. And especially, you know, you might not like it because you see it everywhere, but this is the world we're living in right now. This is where what we're coming to if we don't get a handle on it and start just listening to people more and stop trying to shut them down so much. If $10 full price of admission, I give this one $7.50. I think it's a very good film. You just have to accept it for what it is. And I think some people are really going to have a hard time with that. They're probably going to hate it because they go in wanting this action thrilled war ride, and it's not that. It's very much about the journalist and journalism. So maybe that's a problem on the trailers. I don't know, but I really enjoyed it.
That's very cool. There's a chance I'll check it out when it comes to home video. I don't know about seeing that in the theater.
Fair point, man. Fair point. All right, let's move into our John Hughes Movie Battle Royale. Lastly, before we move on to upcoming attractions, and of course the John Hughes Movie Battle Royale, I do want to mention Fallout, because that is now on Amazon Prime. All 8 episodes have dropped, and this is based on the video game series, which if you've never played, thankfully they made a series for people who don't care about the game, because I've never played it. I don't play RPGs. They're just way too countless. If it takes 60 hours, I don't have time. So it's much easier to get through an 8-hour episode series. This is about a very futuristic, post-apocalyptic LA, and what happens is there's a nuclear decimation. It just destroys the entire world, essentially, and citizens are forced to live in underground bunkers to protect themselves from radiation, mutants, and bandits. Well, one of the characters, who's played by Ella Purnell, and her name's Lucy McLean. It's McLean if you look at the spelling, but it's pronounced McLean, which is also the name of John McLean's daughter in the Die Hard series. I don't know if there's a Easter egg here or there's something I'm not seeing, but all I kept looking for was Bruce Willis. It's really a distraction. But anyway, she is one of the vault dwellers. She lives in a secured vault underground and because of circumstances is forced to go to the surface and contend with Aaron Moten's character, who is named Maximus, and he's basically a king in training. King are these people who reside in these giant mecha suits. And then also Walton Goggins is the ghoul, who is a character that actually has a really interesting backstory that you find out throughout the series and becomes much more than this nuclear decimated person who has lived much longer than anyone else on the planet, apparently. It's a fascinating dynamic, and they're all chasing this scientist for one reason or another. The reasons come together as you watch the series, but all 8 episodes are on Prime. I think people, if you're looking for a new cool show in the vein of like a Westworld or just some kind of futuristic sci-fi, I think this is right up your alley. There's a lot of cool motifs here. There's a lot of cool ideas at play here. I'm sure there are a lot of Easter eggs for game fans, but there was nothing that distracted me. And I had seen some of the iconography, you know, like the thumbs up, Pep Boy, I think they call him, in the show. And, you know, there's even a backstory on that a little bit. You know, that stuff, I recognize it because I've played some games, but I've never played this game. So I've seen it in game ads and things like that. It didn't distract me in any way, shape, or form. I didn't need to know what was going on in the game world to enjoy this series. And I thoroughly enjoy this series. It's full of pretty fantastic and gory action, clever and interesting character development, and a plot we can get behind and interested. And it's a wonderful execution of world building, because it's a world we don't know. I'm sure all the gamers are like, I know that, and I know that, and I know that. We don't know it, right? A regular Joe public doesn't know it. So we're watching it, and we need this world built for us. And I think they do a very good job of building it layer by layer by layer, brick by brick by brick. And it makes for a very engaging series. If you're looking for something new to watch, I think Fallout is definitely up your alley. It's on Prime. It's there now. At $10 full price of admission, I give the full series $8.50. Like, it is a great sci-fi action series that I think people can get behind. And also, Walton Goggins is fantastic. He makes everything better. This is proof once again. You can put this guy under tons of makeup, and he's still better than everyone in the cast. Walton Goggins. You just call him Walton Goggins. You know what I'm saying? Because he's an acting guy. That's too much. It's too far. I know. All right, now we're going to move on to our upcoming releases. So, Troy, tell us what's coming out April 19th, and then Amanda, you can tell us what's coming out on the 26th.
All right, on the 19th, we have a horror movie. That's right, Abigail is coming, where a group of kidnappers watch over a kidnapped ballerina that just so happens to be Dracula's daughter.
Looks awesome.
What a weird concept.
Dude, awesome trailer, though. Awesome trailer. Looks fantastic.
Sasquatch Sunset is also coming. It's a year in the life of a singular family with Jesse Eisenberg, David Zellner, Nathan Zellner, and a bunch of other folks. So make sure you can check this one out if you're in for the family drama.
Do you know it's their Bigfoot families, though? They're a Bigfoot family.
Exactly. It's fun.
Is it?
Hard Miles?
He's trying to get past it without like even acknowledging it. There's just something about this that Sasquatch Troy's just like,
Sunset. He's like in the title.
Yeah, he's just like, this is garbage and I don't care.
You're right. It does say it in the title. Yep.
Yeah, but the one I'm most interested in is going to be Hard Miles, a coming-of-age sports film about a coach who must get students at a medium-security correctional school to work together on a grueling bike ride from Denver to the Grand Canyon. Mm. That one stars Sean Astin. And then if you don't like anything that happens on the weekend, you can say, screw the weekend, and just watch Tiger, a Disney nature film focusing on tigers, dropping on April 22nd.
Man, Disney Plus really doesn't have a lot other than Taylor Swift, which that... Did I tell you guys, I finally watched the Taylor Swift concert? Amazing.
It's great.
Good for you. Awesome.
Amazing.
Love that.
Absolutely amazing. Fell in love. All right, Amanda, what's coming out April 26th?
Well, we've got Unsung Hero. When David Smallbone's successful music company collapses, he moves his family from down under to the States, searching for a brighter future. With nothing more than their 7 children, suitcases, and their love of music, David and his pregnant wife, Helen, set out to rebuild their lives. Get a hobby. With their own dreams on hold, David and Helen begin to realize the musical prowess in their children would go on to become two of the most successful acts in inspirational music history. Five-time Grammy Award-winning artists for King and Country and Rebecca St. James.
I do have a screener of this one, so I will have a review on the website closer to the release.
I love that their hobby is apparently banging, and the girl whose answer literally to whether or not she's going to make this mistake again was, I might crap a baby out my front, so I probably will not make this mistake ever again.
That's a lot of responsibility.
A class we can send John to learn how to word things? Like to say things in like a normal way.
You mean instead of crapping out a baby crapping out the front?
Like, who says shit like this? Like, where do you just hang out at like an Italian Guambino, like fucking mob houses or what? Hey, yeah, you crap out a baby out the front? Is that what you did last week?
You wish you were like me.
Oh my God. Also coming out is Challengers. Tennis player turned coach Tashi, who's played by Zendaya, has taken her husband Art, played by Mike Faist, and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a Challenger event close to the lowest level of pro tournament, where he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Josh O'Connor.
What?
Sounds like drama.
Sex. Absolutely not.
I want to see that so bad.
I'm in.
I want to see it so bad. That trailer looks awesome. That's going to be like a cool little thriller.
That's going to be a cool one.
Yep.
Can't wait.
We've got Infested, which is coming to Shudder. On the brink of 30, Caleb faces unparalleled loneliness, estranged from his sister and best friend over an inheritance dispute.
Read this last part slowly, Amanda.
His fascination with exotic creatures leads him to a venomous discovery. Ew! A spider that soon turns his flat into a terrifying webbed prison? This is terrible! No!
That's all I wanted.
My literal worst. I had to like pick my feet up off the floor. I need you to know that. Like, I am so uncomfortable right now.
Good.
I thought this was going to be like murdery. You know.
Yeah, we talked about Sting last week. You should listen to that.
Yeah, I know. Knuckles on Paramount Plus is the new live action series that will follow Knuckles, played by Idris Elba, on a hilarious and action-packed journey of self-discovery as he agrees to train Wade, who is Adam Pally, as his protege and teach him the ways of the
Echidna
warrior.
I don't know. I mean, it's not like the hedgehog.
Echidna.
Echidna. You know what? If you say it 8 times, eventually you get it right.
It's an echidna.
That's is it a real thing, or is this like from the game?
It's an echidna. It's a creature, just like Sonic is a hedgehog.
Oh, okay.
Knuckles is an echidna.
We did not offend any particular person. That's what I'm worried about. No?
I probably not.
Okay. Real. Like real.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fuzzy video game character, sure. But yeah, people know.
Okay.
We have The King Tide, which has Clayne Crawford, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. After the mayor of an idyllic island village discovers a child with mysterious powers awash on their shores, the once peaceful community is divided by conflict, torn over the belief that the child is the next savior.
Okay.
All right, then. Boy Kills World is a dystopian fever dream action film with Bill Skarsgård, Brett Gelman, and Charito Copley.
Or Chartel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an L. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. Guys, I've been blind like all day today.
Sure.
I am excited for that because the name you didn't mention was John H. Benjamin, and that's going to be awesome.
Is that the voiceover? Well, then
Aaron should have put it in the format.
Yeah.
That's the voiceover. That's the guy whose voice is in the movie.
That could be good or terrible.
It's going to be good.
Okay.
Seems debatable.
I think if you watch the trailer, it looks like fun action, but... it's got a weird tone that they've got like one shot to land if they don't land it right. And it seems like they do in the trailer, but oh boy, can go either way. All right. So the winner of the John Hughes Movie Battle Royale is The Breakfast Club. Yay!
We will not forget about you, The Breakfast Club.
Wow. What just happened?
You're welcome.
What just happened? We didn't mention Curly Sue, and she's having a baby. We didn't mention that. Some kind of wonderful. Wow, there's a lot of them. Somebody added an L in the poll. That's interesting.
Like just the letter?
Just the letter. That's gone. I'll remove
there
that.
There's a typo.
Yeah. So there we go. That was close. That was probably one of the tighter movie battle royales I can think of.
Yeah. Could you imagine how much this could have changed if we had still done the phone a friend for the tiebreakers?
Oh, yeah. We used to do that. And we realized probably not
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where you could just call somebody and be like, what's your answer?
Because we could totally rig that. You just call somebody and you know which way they lean. And like, hey, so in terms of John Hughes movies, definitely Weird Science, man. That's like the most John Hughes movie that ever used.
That's going to be a new tagline, a new quote.
Oh, that's funny.
We need to make that into a... John, make that into a t-shirt. R. John, let me specify. R. John, make that into a t-shirt.
The most Hughes film that ever used. Again.
Huh?
The most John Hughes movie that ever John Hughes'd. And then have like the Breakfast Club people next to the Weird Science.
Just go ahead and throw Judd Nelson's face on
it. Or not Weird Science. Ferris Bueller.
No, you should. You should totally throw Weird Science, because apparently that's a very John Hughes-esque in terms of what he was going for with teenage angst. Creating a sex robot. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. The next one will be our summer movie preview, and then we're taking a couple weeks off after that one. But summer movie preview is next. So thanks everybody for listening to this one. I hope you enjoyed it. And remember, the next time you head to the theater or stream comfortably on your couch watching all of these fantastic John Hughes movies, buy popcorn. Now I need to go do like a whole rewatch of a lot of these.
Yeah, I want like a little John Hughes movie marathon.
What a dream. Did you notice like there's no black people in his movies? I mean, they're set in Chicago. I'm just saying, maybe John Hughes shouldn't have a category.